You know the old joke about why Unitarian Universalists don't sing very well, because they're always looking ahead to see if they can really believe the words. And this one reminds me of that. Lots of us know that song with a few other words in it. And who wert and art and evermore is, I can't not say that hardly. So who was and is doesn't work for me very well. But I do like the song. It was a beautiful, bountiful English garden with quiet nooks for unhurried reflection, generous flowers and bushes and trees, two notably stately yew trees, a fountain, a pond. At the end of one of the gently meandering paths lay the wellhead of the sacred Glastonbury Chalice Well. This is in England. One may sit by it on ancient stone, taking in a soul-deep peace. Pilgrims have come to the never-ceasing well for thousands of years. Christians, reverent at the possibility that the Holy Grail, the chalice that was used at the Last Supper, that caught Christ's blood, was brought there. There are seekers of the divine feminine that flows in the holy well, those who have come after their pilgrimage to the sacred masculine of the Glastonbury Tor, or hill, just outside the well site. Miriam Woito and I had just paid our admission. Miriam was my kind and knowledgeable guide to all kinds of sacred sites and castles for 3 days in England and Wales. Well, I was on sabbatical, for those of you who don't know, I was. The sprightly little man in the Robin Hood hat accepting our money said, "Be sure to touch and speak to the guardian yew trees, one of which is masculine and one of which is feminine. Then ask the lady for something." We nodded, and each of us went our separate reflective way. I sat for a few minutes in the angel seat, sort of unlikely place, but very nice, almost hidden by the riot of English roses bending into that nook. I strolled to the wellhead and sat for who knows how much time. In my sketchbook, I drew the beautiful, intricate well cover, an ancient design of two intersecting circles divided by a staff. Rising and already feeling connection with, in Einstein's words, beauty and sublimity well beyond my mind's grasp, I went to the yew trees. Respectfully, I approached one, touched it, breathed. I felt a peace and comfort, the sense of nature that returns us heady humans to our earth. I approached the other one, again with deep respect. I touched it, breathed, closed my eyes, and I gasped, for a current ran through my body, raising the hair on my arms and the back of my neck. I felt both a flame and part of the earth, and the tree, the earth and the air and the tree under my hands. Respect turned to reverence, and I began to cry. Breathing deeply to contain, if possible, the spirit and earth forces that were coursing through me, I stepped out and I said to the lady, in the main prayer that I ever can offer, which is, guide me. In a crystalline state of awareness, I slowly walked down the gentle hill by the pond. At the small gift shop, I met our admissions taker, a lively and funny man named Brock. He was born Brian, who it turns out is the head of the Hibernian Druids. I told him of my experience, and he said that that tree makes him cry too. That was the female tree. I persuaded him, amidst some pretty lively joking, to sell me something he had crafted from the wood of the famous Glastonbury apple. Actually, what I said to him was, he said, I can't sell it to you. I made it for somebody else. And I said, yeah, but that person lives here, and I live in Idaho in the United States, so you should sell it to me and make another one for him. So he did. We returned to the ewes and invoked earth, air, fire, water, and spirit, communing with each other in that aflame and crystalline way of being, and also feeling each other's humanity and compassion and laughter. We were having a good time, among other things. Here's another sabbatical experience of the holy, this one in northeast Romania. We had visited our partner church in Transylvania, northeast Romania, and there will be much more about that on a later Sunday in November, speaking of spiritual experiences. And we were touring UNESCO World Heritage sites, primarily very old Romanian Orthodox monasteries. Our guide one day was Nicolae, very knowledgeable and a devout Romanian Orthodox. He is an educated man with a great sense of humor, speaks English very well, is married to an overworked doctor in his town, has built his home and built onto his home. We were with UUs from Maine, and we rode in a van to religious and cultural and aesthetic sites. As we drove hither and yon in the van, I was sitting next to Nicolae. I struck up conversation about numerous things, but I was especially interested in his faith. Shoulders touching, facing forward as you do when you're riding, we talked about how he had been reared in the communist era with no faith at all, and how he had come as a late adolescent to Orthodoxy. I could feel the mystery in his heart as he shared with increasing candor, losing the reticence that is perhaps born of guiding Unitarian Universalists on tours. Now I am happy, he said, referring to his life after coming to the church. Reverence and gratitude rose up in me. I loved the story that Andrew, one of Jesus' apostles, came through Romania, I guess maybe on his way to Scotland, I'm not sure, and he lived in a cave on a hillside for a while. Andrew started the Christian faith in Romania. It means a great deal to Nicolae that his very faith, the one he discovered that changed his life, was begun by one of Christ's very apostles. Listening to the depth of his devotion, I felt kindred with his love of the holy as he knew it, in spite of my sharing so little of his actual system of beliefs, practically nothing. The spirit of his heart spoke to the spirit of mine. When we went into the sanctuary of a modern, busy monastery, there were nuns in full habit reaping hay. I stayed close to Nicolae to try and feel from his perspective the holiness of that place, which was quite strange to me. I stepped back respectfully as he kissed the icon. He quietly told us about icons, a little about services, a little about the space and how it's used in that church. As with our conversations in the van, I could feel the joy and the depth of his spiritual commitment to God as he knows God. When we walked out into the sunshine, he said, it's a little bit of heaven. And my heart could hear exactly what he meant. I am a Unitarian Universalist minister, university and seminary trained. I have two master's degrees, and I am as inclined as any of us to think about and explain things. That's what we do. But I am not able nor inclined to explain either of the experiences that I just told you about. I can only tell them. I can draw pictures. I wish I had poems, or even better, I wish I had songs. I know the experiences were possible because I was open to them. Having had sabbatical time, including 30 days at St. Gertrude's Monastery in Cottonwood, Idaho, to settle into a less harried way of being. I know that ordinary life makes it really hard to feel that way of being. I struggle every day, right now, only a couple of months after my sabbatical, to hold on to that truth that I have felt flowing through me. At the same time, I return convinced to the bottom of my soul that we in churches need to be about fundamentally the business of the holy, the mysteries that call us to reverence and awe. Some scientists seem to agree. In the Jane Goodall reading, she says, "How sad it would be, I thought, if we humans were ultimately to lose all sense of mystery, all sense of awe." And Albert Einstein, whose science probably changed the entire world in the 20th century, says, "The most beautiful and deepest experience a person can have is the sense of the mysterious. It is the underlying principle in religion as well as of all serious endeavor in art and science." Now, such experience depends on no belief system. How many of you heard Lyndon Boyce and Gordon Hamilton's summer service this past summer about their raft trip through the Grand Canyon? Anybody here for that? Quite a few. Good. And I ran off some more copies of their manuscript and put them out there. It was a wonderful holy trip, and I recommend that you at least read it. They quote poetry and fiction. They speak reverently of the smallness and delicateness of the human amid such majesty and age. They write gratefully of gaining perspective. I know that Lyndon, anyway, is one of our dedicated humanists. He and Gordon might or might not appreciate the words that I don't mind using, like holy and sacred. But their deeply enriching journey, so close to source, is exactly what I'm talking about. And whatever you think of words or belief systems, they are not relevant to what I'm talking about. Nature brings many of us closer to soul truth and peace and strength. And I strongly recommend wandering in our grove out here. If you can't get out to the mountains or the rivers or whatever, I've been doing that every day I come in for office hours. It's a wonderful place. And it's that nature bringing you back. Social action carried out with heart consideration is a spiritual path for others. Right work, which is a Buddhist concept, helps some of us get closer to the center that gives us strength. Dark nights of the soul are often part of the deepening journey. Unsentimentalized love takes us nearer what I felt in the Chalice Well Garden. Clear-eyed recognition of the ties that bind. Take a moment. Take another breath. Reflect on what centers you and gives you courage when you take the time to feel it and practice it. Feel the rest of us. Pagans, Christians, non-believers, Buddhists, polytheists, atheists, whatever. Feel us sharing the common human longing for meaning, for the movement of heart and gut that makes us better people in the world. Committing ourselves to humble pursuit of mystery, each of us true to our own soul's path, is our fundamental religious duty. In an organizational setting of any sort, but let's just say, like a church, constantly recalling ourselves to this center can bestow courage and generosity. It can give us the patience and the tenacity to work with each other on the never-ending challenge of committees and new organizational structures and mission vision statements and the ever-popular pursuit of learning how to ask for and give money without getting defensive or indignant, all of those ever-popular subjects. I have returned from sabbatical renewed in the knowledge that I have two sacred duties. One is to embody commitment to the holy as well as I can, which please read as really imperfectly. And two, to remind us ever and again that exploring the mysteries of soul and spirit will equip us to be loving with one another and do our work in a way that looks something like church people are doing it. Let me return to the Chalice Well. It is administered by the Chalice Well Trust, which was begun in 1959. And we can only imagine what kind of business that those trustees and staff, there's quite a staff too, have to conduct. I mean, think about it for a minute. Getting the gardening done. It's a huge and gorgeous garden. Huge! Deciding how much to charge. Making budgets, that ever-popular subject. Running a gift shop in a way that doesn't bring unbridled materialism or tackiness into the site. Dealing with the city of Glastonbury, which undoubtedly has regulations to uphold. Cities always do. Keeping the water pure so pilgrims won't go home with horrible ancient bacteria in their systems. Regulating the flow of pilgrims during the annual festival when an extra 175,000 people come to this small town. Etc. We can only imagine what all they have to do. Now, having worked for decades and decades with groups of people, as a teacher and as a minister, I am utterly sure that the human beings who are trustees and staff for the well get frazzled, speak intemperately to each other, get totally out of patience with process, and probably occasionally even leave in a huff, that regrettable response that means we have given up on our comrades. But they have a remarkable document that they call the working ethos. If they return regularly to it, which I hope they do, it will bring their work back into the context of reverence, awe, and mystery. I'm going to read it to you. There are 7 steps. As I read it, reflect other ways that we can use these concepts in our own lives to bring us this kind of synthesis. What they do is they bring their spiritual values and their practice together in the working ethos of the Chalice Well staff and trustees. 1, we acknowledge Chalice Well, fill in your own blank there, as a place of beauty, sacredness, and peace, and we cherish it as such. As a team, we will support each other and foster the spirit of our circle. We will endeavor to have clear, open, and honest communication between us and try to resolve the issues and concerns directly. We will be fully present, taking pride in our work and being wholehearted with the service that we give. We will act with integrity, honesty, and professionalism in all that we do. We will engender right relations and act with respect, care, love, kindness, humor, and humility. 6. We will uphold all spiritual values of goodwill and right intention. And 7, we will demonstrate environmental awareness in our working practice. My sabbatical blessed me with time to slow down, pay attention, and experience life-changing times of soul and spirit. And there will be more sabbatical sermons, spiritual and otherwise. I'm back now. I'm filled with a deep knowing that attending to reverence and love is the foundation of our non-creedal faith, and knowing also that it will take intentionality. We are here to nurture all souls within our walls, all walls, and we are here to go forth from the strength gained and to help heal the world. For myself and for all of us, I hope that we will lift up our vision, and I hope that it is close to the ethos of that of the Chalice Well trustees and staff. Amidst all of the transition and business conducting that we must do, I don't ever want you to hear me dissing all the business that has to be done. We have tons of it to do. Amidst all of that, may we see our lives as places of beauty, sacredness, and peace. May we be wholehearted in the service that we offer. May we treat each other with respect, care, love, kindness, humor, and humility. May our integrity shine as each of us, alone and together, dwells in reverence and awe.